If the radicalization of young men is perceived less as a mobilized global army and movement and more as a reaction to hopelessness in communities around the world where there are no opportunities, think less about the kingpins like Osama bin Laden and more about the nameless young men who join groups like ISIS. From the terrorist attacks in Paris to the recruits who join ISIS that we know nothing about, can it be addressed by viewing it as a social pathology, curing radicalization on the ground where it finds sympathy rather than fighting battles exclusively in Syria or in airports or on the streets of Paris? Scott Atran has observed a pattern in extensive field interviews with would-be and convicted terrorists. He is a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice and an anthropologist at the University of Michigan. Scott, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hi.
What do you think the principal sort of value is in thinking about terrorism from the perspective of psychological, individual sort of deterioration or radicalization?
Well, it's a convergence of a number of things. I mean, mostly it's young people in transitional stages in their lives between 18 on up to 30, between jobs, between girlfriends, immigrant students, having left their native family, looking for a new family, and especially those on the margins, much more so, of course, in Europe than here, where Muslims, for example, they integrate and become get average socioeconomic status and education by the first generation. In Europe, even after three generations, they're 10 times more likely to be poor and less educated. They live in housing projects. France, for example, about 7.5 million people, 7.5%, excuse me. Yet it's 60 to 75% of the prison population, very much like black youth in ghettos in the United States. But the difference is there's an ideology out there. So, for, you know, one guy I was interviewing wanted to blow up the American embassy, and I asked him, well, why did you want to do that? And he gave me the whole spiel about oppression of Muslims across the world. And I said, no, why'd you want to do it? And he said, well, you know, I was walking down the street, Boulevard La République. My sister was window shopping. She had a veil on. She bumped into this elderly French man, and he spat at her and said, Sale Arabe, you dirty Arab. And he said, then I knew I wanted to join the jihad. But I said, there's always been racism out there. They said, yes, but the jihad didn't exist. It's an attractor. It doesn't recruit. People are self-seekers, and it's a very, very powerful ideology. We think it's crazy, but the caliphate, it's here to stay as an idea, and is drawing more and more people. So I wouldn't even call it terrorism anymore. It's a worldwide, global, world historical movement, and it's becoming very dangerous.
Is it a movement in the sense of a political movement that is organized, or is it simply the disgruntlement and hopelessness of a large demographic that may or may not be interrelated?
Well, certainly appealing to the hopelessness of that large demographic. That's its pool of volunteers. But the movement itself is a very, very deeply moral and ideological movement.
So if this were a strategy of law enforcement, say on the street, and you have young, disgruntled kids in the United States falling in love with the adventure of being a, you know, sort of drug kingpin or something like that, the police strategy or the social strategy would be to get them other heroes, sports figures, role models, that sort of thing. First of all, did that work in the United States? And is there a model for dealing with crime of terrorism that puts it in a law enforcement model rather than this like fight ISIS to the death model?
Right. Well, the United States is very different, of course. And the NYPD, despite what people say about it, has done a marvelous job at being able to handle it. They realize, like jihadis all over the world, I mean potential jihadis, that 3 out of every 4 of people join it through their friends, about 20% through their families. There's very little recruitment. And when you have local policing, like the NYPD is, when you're in the neighborhoods with people from the same ethnic group in the police department talking to these people, saying, look, we don't want a problem. You don't want a problem. Let's work together. It can work. But in Europe, it's very different. These people are on the margins. They live in these unbelievable housing projects where people don't even dare to go. There's really no hope there. And when people get out of prison, there's a huge echo in the community to keep it going.
So Europe particularly, thinking of the Charlie Hebdo attacks of this month, should look to itself and the way it's socially organized, not look to some battle in Syria or Iraq as a way of stopping the terrorist attacks that, were so demoralizing to the people of France.
Yeah, American social fabric is built to assimilate immigrants, whatever the foreign policy is and whatever the current debate is on immigration. It's still built to assimilate that. It never was in Europe. This is a new thing in Europe. They don't know how to handle it. And then they make sort of ridiculous statements like it has nothing at all to do with Islam, which is crazy too. But you can't, you know, you can't put it on the Islamic community, but you've got to deal with the fact that these people have not been integrated in society, and you've got to try to come up with solutions that come from within them.
All right, in your experience, and you've spent a lot of time on the ground here, what you're saying is pretty important. It seems to me that in Europe, you're saying that a young, hopeless, you know, jihad-inspired young person, when they get the sense of the movement, don't really have an option to do something on the ground in France that might better their own life. But in the United States, anybody who maybe is attracted by jihadism also knows that they have a shot at some kind of entrepreneurial on the ground, even just a stupid small business. But they have way more of an option in the United States because we're an assimilated economy than they do in Europe.
Yeah, they do. I mean, one of the terrible things about Europe itself is that the young people completely feel totally on the outs and have no idea what to do.
It sounds like the better defense against domestic terrorism in the United States is this assimilation culture, not our law enforcement and Homeland Security. Is that what you observed?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, another real big problem there that's not here is the ideals of liberal democracy, the things that made the American Revolution and even the French Revolution, they're not inspiring young people anymore to sacrifices. If you look at the recent polls, an ICM poll from this summer, one out of every four French young people between the ages of 24, not just Muslims, which are only 7-8% of the population, all French young people find the Islamic State attractive. On the other side, you've got the radical right, the xenophobic nationalists playing into it, and you have this tacit alliance between the radical Islam and the xenophobic rights that's tearing apart European society like the fascists and the communists did in the 1920s. And the middle class is being torn apart in Europe. They don't really know what to do. And the divide is increasing, and I'm not all that optimistic.
Scott Atran is a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Also, he's an anthropologist at the University of Michigan. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.